This is Susan V. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out, and I'm honored to be speaking with John Major Jenkins. John is an expert on Mayan cosmology, renowned throughout the world in the field, and he's been studying that field for the past 20 years. He will be presenting at the Telluride Mushroom Festival, or Shroom Fest, on several different occasions, but the unifying thread in all of his talks is the role of shamanism in the creation of profound cosmologies. John, thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Susan. I'm glad to be here, and I'm looking forward to Telluride.
I bet. We're looking forward to having you come to town. So let's begin, I guess, at the beginning of your professional life. How did you get involved with the study of the Maya?
Well, that goes back to being a young man in the mid-80s and wanting to travel down to the villages in Guatemala. And I saved up some money, and I went south of the border. And I basically fell in love with Maya culture. And I returned four or five times over the next several years doing volunteer projects, service projects. And my research kind of developed as a result of that, looking more deeply into these questions of the Maya calendar and Maya cosmology, how sophisticated were the ancient Maya. You know, going around and visiting the ancient temples was a great inspiration. So everything sort of unfolded from there, and I started tackling the great Maya enigma of 2012 about 20 years ago.
Okay, and we'll get to that in one moment. But first, let's talk about the role of sacred plants and shamanism in the formulation of that 2012 calendar.
Yeah, this is fascinating. I'll be talking about this in great detail in one of my talks in Telluride. I looked at the early site called Izapa. This is the site that many scholars already agreed was probably involved in the formulation of this long count calendar. That long count calendar is the one that gives us the 2012 cycle ending date. So I examined the Izapa, and I found amazing astronomy in the orientations of the buildings. You know, this would be called archaeoastronomy. And I also found carved monuments that were depicting the Maya creation mythology, the story of the hero twins and so on. So there was an integration of sophisticated astronomy and this creation mythos that was involved in expressing spiritual teachings. But the core thing that I found at the site was that there are carvings depicting the Bufo marinus toad and vision scrolls coming out of its glands and its neck, you know. So, you know, psychedelic enthusiasts know that this substance that can be harvested from the Bufo toad is 5-MeO-DMT, which is a powerful hallucinogen. Another thing about the site of Izapa is that there were sacred mushroom stones found all over the site. So the role of shamanism, the role of psychedelics, seem to have been really, really important in the formulation of this long count calendar.
Okay, thank you. Elegant answer. I appreciate it. So you've been involved with organizing tours to Maya sites with the Maya. Does that present in any way, shape, or form a conflict with talking about the culture of the Maya?
No, well, not in the way that I've done it. I co-founded a nonprofit called the Maya Conservancy several years ago, and it's mainly being run by other people now. But we work closely with the Maya people and leaders, and we basically design tours that go towards benefiting Maya communities. So, for example, with the Maya Conservancy, I've done, you know, what I'll do is I'll go along on the trip, and I'll integrate with the Maya as we do fire ceremony at the different sites. We did succeed in bringing the Maya people to Izapa, which was a major accomplishment about 2 years ago. So I don't make any money personally on it. I think that question is whether I'm sort of capitalizing on 2012 and exploiting the Maya or something like that. Well, a lot of that is going on. There's a lot of bad information out there and that kind of thing. But the Maya Conservancy tours are oriented towards paying the Maya directly for their services, as well as feeding money back into the communities for different types of projects that we're doing.
Wonderful, and thank you for that clarification. I really appreciate it. So there in your work, throughout your work, you speak of a Lord Jaguar. Who was that Maya king?
This will be really exciting to share because it involves some of the late-breaking discoveries. Lord Jaguar was a Maya king in the 7th century A.D., and he carved a monument, and he has the 2012 date on that monument. This has only become widely known in the last 5 or 6 years, and I've been writing articles on it, and it sort of forced scholars to take a serious look at 2012 because for many, many years prior to that, professional Maya scholars were not treating 2012 as a serious topic. So Lord Jaguar, he did this amazing thing with the 2012 date. It actually connects with his birthday astronomy, and I'll be going into this in one of my presentations, the one on Lord Jaguar. So there's exciting new things. Oh, and apart from that, an even more recent breakthrough is the discovery of another 2012 inscription. This was announced only a couple months ago. It's from a site called La Corona, and the king of Calakmul, whose name was Yuknum, he also used the 2012 date on an inscription. So this is exciting stuff, and it's really helping us understand how the Maya were thinking about 2012.
Please expand a little bit on that idea. There seems to be a wonderful conjunction going on between your 20 years of research and the actual, well, 5 months away from the actual December 2012 date that we're discussing. So what sorts of new research has emerged that really play back into the message that you've been putting out for all these years?
Okay. Well, my work is about astronomy as well as an ideology, and it's oriented towards reconstructing what the ancient Maya themselves thought about 2012. So there's astronomy and a belief system or ideology. What did the Maya think about 2012? Well, for 20 years, I've been pointing to the evidence that shows that the Maya thought about 2012 as like a transformation and renewal, not some kind of apocalyptic doomsday that the media likes to throw at us. So this one idea that it's about renewal, and I show that through my work at Azapa and in the creation myth and period-ending ceremonies that the Maya even still do today. So it's all congruent with what even the modern Maya believe. But for many years, the scholars were poo-pooing the whole 2012 thing. So the strange thing is that now that scholars are forced to look at the evidence, they're actually starting to echo the same ideas that I put on the table 20 years ago. So there's a lot of things going on in the popular culture, too, around like the Birth 2012 movement and all this stuff. So this whole thing about this feeling of transformation and renewal, I think, has a larger sort of implication for what we're going through over the next 5 months. You know, we're sort of at a turning point in our culture, and we need to embrace the energies of renewal and move forward into another, you know, a better, more sustainable way of doing things on the planet.
So I want you to clarify this a bit further. I want you to state the difference clearly for lay people like me to know. The difference between the end of world, which is what so many people have misinterpreted the work that you've done to mean. So the difference between the end of world and the end of a world age, what exactly within that difference does renewal mean?
Right. Well, it's the difference between a cyclic time philosophy and a linear time philosophy. So the end of a world age is just the end of a cycle. And the end of that cycle is then involved in the processes of transformation and renewal. And the Maya still practice ceremonial activities that are designed to facilitate that. I actually think that a lot of the modern enthusiasts of shamanism and the healing practices of psychedelic shamanism are engaged in this kind of energetic process of transformation and renewal, you know, reconnection with the core source energies, and then coming out of that feeling reborn and stuff like that. So a linear time philosophy, which is kind of what we have coming at us from the Judeo-Christian tradition is apocalyptic in nature. It's linear. There's a beginning, there's history, and then there's an apocalyptic end. So there's a big difference between the end of a world age and the end of the world. Those two things sometimes get confused because, you know, people are assuming a linear time philosophy when it's really about cyclic time. And, you know, that's what the Maya have observed. That's the philosophy of time that the Maya and many indigenous First Nations around the world still have. It comes from observing the cycles in nature. You know, nature moves in cycles. Nature's not linear. There's, you know, birth, growth, maturity, decline, death, and a recycling back into the matrix of the earth and coming back out of it. So it's a real different way of looking at time and life that I think is more indigenous in nature, but we see it affirmed in all of the indigenous shamanistic cultures around the world. It's just sort of at odds with the assumptions of our Western upbringing for the most part.
Wonderful, thank you. And a final question. Have you been misquoted as talking about trans-dimensional beings? And if not, if yes, clarify why, what that really means. And if no, if that's an accurate term that you use, what does it mean?
Oh, well, this could be a fun topic of conversation. Maybe there'll be some time for this in the Q&A sections after my talks. Transdimensional beings I think of as, well, I come from a perspective on this, like the perennial philosophy, like what Joseph Campbell or Aldous Huxley talk about, that there are higher levels or dimensions or domains of reality that we don't normally perceive, but we can access them in heightened states of consciousness. So I think of these as being higher dimensional beings that you can, you know, have interactions with. And, you know, this is probably a topic for a longer conversation, but I don't see them as being equivalent to the ancient aliens thing that is so popular in the culture right now, which is sort of a literalized, concretized version of this. We can receive higher dimensional information and insight from higher dimensional beings that we access in shamanic states, or that one might have in a vision or something like that. But that's not to be confused with actual hardware spaceships landing and you know, physical aliens popping out of the machines to fiddle with our genes or something like that, you know.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah, so that's an interesting topic, though. Yeah.
Would they be equivalent, these beings, to people, to beings like the rishis or the bodhisattvas in the Eastern tradition?
I think so. Something like that would be equivalent. The great question is whether they have autonomous reality in and of themselves on some higher plane, or whether they are projections of our own collective psychology. And this gets into the question of, like, you know, non-dual philosophies and the integration of the inner and the outer worlds and how these things work. And but, yeah, I think that, you know, they'd be equivalent to what you find in all of the world's religions, you know, angels, you know, rishis, guiding spirits, that kind of thing.
Wonderful. Well, we could go on, and I would love to have a longer conversation with you, but we'll end for now. And thank you for the teaser. This has been Susan Vibrock, Telluride Inside and Out. I've been speaking with John Major Jenkins, an expert in Maya culture, and he will be coming to the Telluride Shroom Fest to discuss all that he knows just in time for that December 2012 date. John, we look forward to seeing you just shortly.
Wonderful. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.